25 of Surah Ali Imran, these two verses on page 62, inshallah. So everybody, let's once listen to the recitation.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. فمن افترى على الله الكذب من بعد ذلك فأولئك هم الظالمون قل صدق الله فاتبعوا ملة إبراهيم حنيفا وما كان من المشركين.
That was great, and now we will explain a bit, okay, this about these two verses, and then inshallah move on to the tajweed rules, the same as our previous sessions, inshallah. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Allah Almighty says in ayah 94, فَمَنِ افْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ الْكَذِبَ مِن بَعْدِ ذَلِكَ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الظَّالِمُونَ. In ayah 95, قُلْ صَدَقَ اللَّهِ فَاتَّبِعُوا مِلَّةَ إِبْرَاهِيمَ حَنِيفًا وَمَا كَانَ مِنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ. Right?
Yes.
In ayah 94, Allah Almighty says, فَمَنِ افْتَرَى. So whoever fabricates a lie against Allah Almighty after that, or attributes lie to Allah Almighty. فَمَنِ افْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ الْكَذِبِ. Lie, okay? فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الظَّالِمُونَ. It is they who are the wrongdoers. Then in ayah 95, Allah says, قُلْ, O Prophet, say, صَدَقَ اللَّهِ. Allah has spoken the truth. Okay? Allah has spoken the truth. فَاتَّبِعُوا مِلَّةَ إِبْرَاهِيمَ حَنِيفًا. So follow the creed, the nation of Ibrahim alayhi salam, the religion of Ibrahim alayhi salam, who was a hanif. وَمَا كَانَ مِنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ. And he was not one of the polytheists. He was a monotheist. So guys, in the previous ayah, in ayah 93, Allah Almighty talked about the important argument of the Jewish and the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Yes, those who were saying that, well, this food is haram and Muslims do so and they do not care about haram things. Well, actually, when Allah Almighty sends a rule, okay? The laws. Sends the laws, okay? So, who sends the laws? Allah Almighty. Now, guys, I'm saying this, okay? If anybody, okay? If anybody, I'm just saying an inference, okay, that I've understood. I want to say about this ayah that when Allah Almighty sends the rules, okay, the laws, when Allah Almighty completes His hujjah, okay, His proofs, okay, Allah Almighty sends all His proofs, His reasons to reasoning people, okay, to wise people, okay. After that, there is no other excuse. When Allah tells you everything, goodnesses and badnesses of everything, advantages and disadvantages of everything, Allah Almighty proves it, and there will be no excuse for you. In the day of judgment, you will not have any excuse to say, God, you didn't send me the rule. Okay? There is no excuse. Then you cannot say, God, you didn't. God, there was a blah, 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 these things. You can't attribute any lies, okay? You can't do anything. So if you do not follow the rules after this, if you have received the rules, okay? If you do not follow, then you will be also among the wrongdoers.
IRIB English Radio, in cooperation with Xavier International Schools, presents Let's Recite the Quran.
So, guys, our time for explanation is up. We must move to the tajweed rules. I want you, inshallah, to learn more about these verses, but you can't do so if you do not refer to the tafsir books. So please refer to the tafsir books, inshallah, to learn more. Okay? Fawad, Hassan, Hussein, and Ali Nasir. That's right.
Yes.
Let's go on to the important tajweed rules. فمن افترى على الله الكذب من بعد ذلك فأولئك هم الظالمون. Very simple. فمن افترى. If you do not read فمن, how do you start the word, the next word after it? افترى, افترى, افترى.
افترى.
Why?
Because of the third letter.
Third letter. What is it? The harakat on the third letter, the vowel on the third letter. So what is the vowel on the third letter?
Fatha.
Whenever you have a fatha or a kasra, okay, the hamzatul wasl will be assigned kasra. With kasra. But when the third letter has a dhamma, vowel dhamma, well, it will be assigned with
dhamma.
But here you join them together. So if when you join them, you skip hamzatul wasl. Famaniftara. The harakat will be. Look, noon is also sakin. Hamzatul wasl is also sakin, right? Faman. Noon is sakin. So if iltaqata sakinatain, hurrik, well, put a kasra down there, okay? On the noon, beneath the noon, okay, and read it. Fama.
Niftara.
Ra has a heavy sound. Also has an alif mad. Alallahi. Allah. There is a fatha sound before the word Allah. Ala, ala. Alif mad will be skipped because there is hamzatul wasl after it, right? Ala Allahi, no. Ala Allahi, fast and happily, not furiously. Okay. Ala Allahi, ala Allahi. Heavily pronounce the letter lam in the word Allah. Al kadhiba, also hamzatul wasl will be skipped. Ala Allahi al kadhiba. Min ba'di dhalik. Who could say this? Min ba'di. What is the rule here?
Iqlab.
Iqlab. MashaAllah. You hide the sound of noon and produce a hidden
meme sound.
Do you hide the sound of noon?
No, it's no. Like half meme sound.
No, no. What change. About the noon?
Change.
Change the noon to a hidden meme sound. Min ba'di dhalik. But make sure there is a nasal sound also. Fa'ula'ika. This is easy. We have said a lot. Okay, we have told this a lot. It's wajib. Wajib mat. Wajib mutasil, right?
Yeah.
You must stretch. Humu al-zalimun. Humu. Hum al-zalimun. Again.
You skip two sakin letters. Hamzatul wasl.
Yeah. Two sakin letters we have here, but we do not put a kasra on meme. Underneath the meme, okay? We put a dhamma. So humu. It might be because of the previous letter, ha, which has an u. Humid zalimun, no. Humud zalimun. Zalimun, a heavy letter. Qul, next ayah. Qul, sadaqallahu. Qul, sadaqallahu. Okay? Sadaqallahu. Again, the same as ala Allahi. The letter lam in the word Allah will be pronounced heavily. So, qila, is that qila? Yeah. It tells you, it's better to...
Stop.
But you could continue if you want. فَاتَّبِعُوا فَاتَّبِعُوا It is yes?
Yeah.
فَاتَّبِعُوا Actually, it is تَبِعُوا, okay? Hamzatul wasl. Because ta is sakin, you can't read it. That's why you have hamzatul wasl there. That's the reason why we use hamzatul wasl. فَاتَّبِعُوا مِلَّةَ إِبْرَاهِيمَ حَنِيفًا Tanween. After tanween, you got a waw. The next word, wa.
Idgham.
Idgham. You merge them and a nasal sound. Two counts also. Millata Ibrahim hanifan. Also, Ibrahim. The letter ba.
Qalqal.
And a bounce. Echo the sound. Ibrahim hanifan. Wa ma kana min al mushrikeen. That's all. There is no special rule, okay? Let's read once. I'll read. Make sure you practice, inshallah. We've got 1 minute. So, brothers, this is the last minute in this session. Listen carefully, inshallah. We'll practice these two verses of Surah Ali Imran, and we'll move on, inshallah. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
فمن افترى على الله الكذب من بعد ذلك فأولئك هم الظالمون
فمن افترى على الله الكذب من بعد ذلك فأولئك هم الظالمون
أحسنتم ما شاء الله قل صدق الله
قل صدق الله
فاتبعوا ملة إبراهيم حنيفا وما كان من المشركين
فاتبعوا ملة إبراهيم حنيفا وما كان من المشركين
Now let's say صدق الله Okay, قل صدق الله صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
Ahsantum, mashallah. Allah bless you. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters. Alhamdulillah, we explained a bit about this ayah. And then we mentioned the important tajweed rules. We practiced the recitation. That's all from us for today. Inshallah, we'll be here with you in the coming sessions. Stay with IRB English Radio. Thank you so much for being with us up to this time. Brothers here, Fawad, Hassan, Hussein, Ali Nasir. And inshallah, we'll be here again with you. See you. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
First days of January. Part 3.
The beginning of the year in early January, these days always have a special feeling for me. I was born 22 years ago in such days in a village in the province of Aleppo. I've always had these feelings in me in early January. Perhaps none of my friends, relatives, or even I thought that after 12 years of my birth in this land, events would happen that would change the course of history. I am Fatemeh Ali, a student of journalism at Allameh Tabatabwe University in Tehran. In my country, due to the war in Syria, I was forced to leave school and immigrate to Iran. The shy little girl in the town of Nubl, whose biggest concern was the half-hour drive away from the University of Aleppo, today writes stories for us that include hundreds of volumes of books. Today is my birthday. My friends have invited me to listen to my travelogue. Like me, they too have endured the hardships of exile and immigration. Today I was supposed to tell them the story of my 1.5 years of absence from my hometown. Four years of siege, famine, and starvation. 4 years without gas and electricity during the bone-chilling cold of northern Syria. This is only part of the suffering of the cities of Nubl and Al-Zahra. In those days, the dreams and wishes of the people depended on the fighters fighting outside the city. Those whose hearts burned like ours and did their best to not let the city fall into the hands of the Takfiri terrorists. Idlib province welcomes you. I am a member of the media and the child of Nubl. Hama welcomes you. I can stop anywhere on this route and I can even show the situation of my country to the whole world. A country who was involuntarily entered into a world war. Haj Qasim broke the siege of Nubl and Al-Zahra so that the sanctity of the divine sanctuary would not be violated again. This is why he was named the Master of Martyrs of the Defenders of the Shrine. Anyone who wants to know more about them should read the story of Karbala over and over again. It seems that all the sieges in the world were to be broken by martyr Haj Qasim Soleimani. So, wherever the voice of the oppressed was heard in the siege, the presence of the martyr Haj Qasim Soleimani was also evident. The geographical location made no difference for him. But the greatest wish of the commander of the Quds force was to liberate the place where the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, ascended to heaven, the only place where the earth and the heavens meet. The land that is sacred to all religions, Al-Aqsa Mosque or Holy Quds. My report on Syria had taken on the colour of resistance. I felt that I had to approach the occupied Palestinian territories to narrate the last mission of Haj Qasim. The story of the Battle of Karbala is not just a narrative for the resistance fighters. It is an experience that should not be repeated, and this was the reason that made the resistance fighters rush to defend any shrine that was under siege. The road between the Levant and the Hejaz must be equipped until the Savior appears. A 22-year-old girl began her journey from northern Syria to southern Lebanon without any fear in her heart. The road to the borders of occupied Palestine, the road in which the commander of the Quds force restored security and peace. There is only one step left until the emergence of Imam Mahdi. The resistance has stood steadfast and strong against this cancerous tumor and inflicted great losses on it. But Haj Qasim prepared a world army to break the hegemony of Zionism. The popular uprising in Iraq, the Zainabis in Pakistan, the Fatimiyun in Afghanistan, the popular forces in Syria, the Ansarullah in Yemen, the resistance forces in Africa, and there may be other armies that we are still unaware of. Haj Qasim stood every day on the borders of occupied Palestine, reminding all the free people of the world of his last mission for which he was striving for. Quds is the secret key to the emergence of the savior of humanity. Today, Martyr Qasim Soleimani is leading the Quds and Palestine Liberation Army with more will and power.
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran welcomes the Arab League's decision to readmit Syria into the bloc, saying this follows Syria's great victory over terrorists. The U.S. president renews his call for a national assault weapons ban and other gun safety measures in the wake of a mass shooting in Texas that claimed 8 lives. And recession fears mounting in Germany as official data shows drops in manufacturing, energy and construction in Europe's top economy. And welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned into World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Iran has hailed the Arab League's decision to readmit Syria into the body 12 years after the country's suspension. The spokesman for Iran's foreign ministry says this followed Syria's great victory over terrorists and the support Syrians gave to their government. Nasser Kanani said Tehran welcomes the fact that regional countries have settled differences in a move that curbs foreign interventions. Now, the spokesman said Tehran hopes that regional countries will further strengthen cooperation based on shared interests. Earlier, Russia also welcomed the readmission, which it has called a long-awaited step. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas also commended Syria's return to the Arab League. It called on Muslim countries to strengthen bonds of friendship and counter Israel's expansionist projects. Political commentator Tim Anderson is of the opinion that Arab countries want to reassert their influence in the region in some new ways now that the war on Syria has failed.
So there are contradictions in that. There are contradictions in the Bahraini regime, the UAE, in their normalization. But at the same time, they reestablish relations with Syria. They want to be relevant. That's really what's driven this. They don't want to be left out. They see that the dirty war on Syria has failed. And all of those states want to have reassert their influence in some new ways in the new reality of the region. That's what's going on. But they can't just immediately abandon all of the relations they've had with the U.S. After all, they've acted in U.S. interests for many, many years. And it's going to be interesting to see how they try and disentangle themselves from this relationship, because, of course, the U.S. is not, it may be a declining power, but it's not harmless. It's capable of doing some real damage, particularly to its collaborators, which are seen to betray them or go in a different direction. We've seen what they've done with collaborators in many other countries in the past.
Iran's top general Mohammad Baqiri says there are new signs of a shift in the global balance of power from west to east. The chief of general staff of Iranian armed forces says the U.S. has been trying to impose itself as the absolute ruler of the world, but the new shift hints at a future that belongs to Asia. Major General Mohammad Baqiri also called for defense cooperation with Oman and invited the country to join the international marine drills Iran holds in the region. Baqiri was speaking during a meeting with his Omani counterpart, Vice Admiral Abdullah bin Hamis al-Raisi. And the Omani official said regional solidarity leads to security. He added that regional disagreements should not become a reason for foreign interventions. Now, the families of a group of Iranians captured by the Mojahedin Khaq terror organization MKO have gathered in front of the Red Cross office in Tehran. They demand the immediate release of their loved ones who have been held by the terrorists for decades.
Today is the day of International Committee of the Red Cross. On this occasion, some families have gathered here and they're demanding to see their loved ones who are trapped in the MEK in camps in Albania. And the most basic human rights of these people inside their camps is abused, and including not being able to contact the outside world, particularly the families. And they are demanding that the Red Cross would use all its capacity, trying to force Albanian government and other international bodies to try to make some connection between these people and the people inside the camps. Some of them haven't heard about their loved ones for more than 40 years now. And this is a very grave suffering. And we have tried for many years to just make contact. We just want a simple call or a letter or being able to visit their loved ones. That's all. And to learn that if they are safe and sound.
The U.S. president has once again called on Congress to move to curb access to guns following the mass shooting at a mall in Texas over the weekend. Joe Biden is seeking a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Biden also called for universal background checks and an end to immunity for gun manufacturers. On Saturday, a gunman went on a shooting spree at a busy mall north of the city of Dallas, killing 8 people and injuring 7 others. This comes as reports say the social media accounts of the shooter contain hundreds of posts with racially or ethnically motivated content and violent far-right rhetoric. The reports say the Dallas resident may have been linked to a white supremacist or neo-Nazi group. Now, the UK's anti-monarchists have criticized the heavy-handed policing of King Charles III's coronation. They say there is no longer a right to peaceful protest in Britain after dozens of protesters were arrested and detained into the night. The detainees included Graham Smith, who leads the anti-monarchy group known as the Republic. In a statement, Smith said his arrest was predetermined and would have occurred regardless of any evidence or action. He added that the arrests were not about protecting people from harm, but about protecting the king from embarrassment. London's Metropolitan Police said a total of 64 arrests were made during Coronation Day protests. The detainees' charges included breach of the peace and conspiracy to cause a public nuisance.
The one-of-a-kind, multi-billion-pound coronation is finally coming to an end. A 3-day ceremony which saw King Charles III crowned along with his wife, Camilla. More than 2,000 guests, including world leaders, aristocrats, and celebrities, all participated in the event. Tens of thousands of people flooded the streets in London to see King Charles III formally crowned. Thousands saw the king receiving a royal salute from members of the military in the gardens of Buckingham Palace following his coronation. The coronation of King Charles III in London's historic Westminster Abbey was the first in the United Kingdom for 7 decades. Heavy police presence overshadowed the wealthy event. The London Metropolitan Police deployed more than 11,000 officers for one of their biggest ever security operations for the day of the coronation. For many, the coronation of King Charles III was maybe a lifetime event full of joy and days-long festivities as tens of thousands turned out to catch a glimpse of the newly crowned King Charles and Queen Camilla, who rode in a state coach back to Buckingham Palace after Saturday services at Westminster Abbey. But not everyone who came to watch the multi-billion-pound ceremony was there to cheer Charles. Thousands of people poured onto the streets to protest against the antiquated monarchical system.
Not my king! Not my king! Not my king!
My king! Not my king! Not my king!
Because I don't believe in hereditary monarchy, and I think this is costing a huge amount of money when lots of people are struggling, and the economy is falling apart, and the public services are awful, and we need to invest in that and not in Charles and his big party.
London's Metropolitan Police said in total, over 60 arrests were made on Saturday for what it called offenses, including breach of the peace and conspiracy to cause a public nuisance. Those detained include leader of an anti-monarchist group, the Republic. Graham Smith criticized the policing of the coronation as heavy-handed, saying the arrests were not about protecting people from harm, but about protecting the kingdom from embarrassment.
Well, the coronation comes at a time when Britain is grappling with numerous economic woes. This includes record high inflation that has led to months of strikes and protests. With many Brits struggling to make ends meet, the government is spending taxpayer money on a multi-million pound state ceremony.
The coronation of King Charles III comes as there is no budget revealed for the historic national state occasion. Some suggest that the ceremony could cost the nation between 50 to 100 million pounds. The government has so far refused to comment on the exact cost, making the amount of public funds spent on the festivities unknown. What is known, though, is that the multi-million pound coronation falls to taxpayers to foot the bill. Not only that, the coronation comes at a time when the country is gripped with protests and strikes in a dispute with the government over pay. Since last June, a huge number of workers have walked off their jobs, including teachers, civil servants, train and bus drivers, border officials and university staff, nurses, ambulance drivers, and staff at swath of government agencies, just to express that they can't literally make ends meet. With several waves of strikes sweeping the UK, the economy has been hit harder than initially expected. The UK inflation has experienced a 40-year high. That includes food prices, with some key ingredients seeing a steep rise of up to 50%, according to some detailed government data. The situation is to the extent where many people across the country are struggling to put food at the table. Furthermore, the UK financial woes have exacerbated the economic and social inequality there. That has prompted many to question the costly pomp and pageantry associated with the state-funded ceremony. A survey prior to the coronation showed that most of the British people simply did not want to pay for the costly event, and instead, they wanted the coronation to be funded by the royal family itself. Anti-monarchy activists say the cost is a slap in the face for millions of people who are struggling to meet their basic needs. Yet, they have to foot the bill in the form of taxes. Maybe that's why many across Britain see the monarchy as outdated and undemocratic, saying the coronation is a celebration of hereditary power and has no place in modern society. Maybe that's why many are worried that the coronation of a 74-year-old man will indirectly result in so many people going hungry.
And now to Germany, where recession fears mount as industrial production in Europe's top economy sees an unexpected decline. Official data shows production in manufacturing, energy, and construction dropped 3.4% in March compared with the previous month. It swung from an upward increase of over 2% in February. The automotive industry was a major contributor to the recent drop. The automobile sector is a pillar of Germany's economy, and it is hammered by high energy prices following the outbreak of the war in Ukraine. Well, Kiev says Moscow has launched a massive swarm of drones at Ukrainian targets, including the capital. 60 drones were reportedly fired, 36 of them toward Kiev. Ukraine claims it shot all of them down, adding, however, that the debris hit apartments and other buildings, injuring at least 5 people. This has been the largest drone swarm by Russia in months. Moscow made the charge on the eve of the May the 9th holiday, celebrating the defeat of Nazi Germany in 1945. Many expected such an attack, which would be in response to the recent drone strike by Kiev, including the failed attempt on the Kremlin, which Russia said targeted President Putin. This is while fighting rages mainly in Kharkiv, Kherson, Odessa, and Bakhmut, with Russian forces firing rockets at Ukrainian positions. Well, the fifth edition of export capabilities of the Islamic Republic of Iran has kicked off in the Iranian capital of Tehran. Hundreds of foreign investors from different countries have participated in this year's event to assess opportunities for cooperation with Iranian companies. Mahdi Abbasian brings us more.
The fifth export potential exhibition of the Islamic Republic of Iran, dubbed Iran Expo 2023, has officially kicked off in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi inaugurated the exhibition. During his speech, Raisi hailed Iran's progress despite sanctions, saying Iranian scientists and industrialists have managed to make great achievements. He also said that the Iranian government has set a 40-year record exporting over $50 billion worth of commodities since August 2021, when his government came into power. Since the early hours of the opening, the exhibition salons were packed with investors and business people from every corner of the world. Representatives from 60 foreign countries have participated in this year's event. The UAE, Pakistan, Russia, Turkey, and China are among the countries taking part in the exhibition. There are a total of 750 domestic companies and representatives at the event that have put their products on display in different industrial, medical, and petrochemical areas, as well as home appliances and food industries. The fifth export potential exhibition of the Islamic Republic of Iran showcases the trade and investment opportunities in the country for foreign businessmen and entrepreneurs. The exhibition will be held from May 7th to 10th. Iranian officials have estimated that the expo will help add more than $2 billion to the country's export revenues.
Iran Expo 2023 provides a platform, a perfect platform for investment in non-oil industries of Iran, and the presence of thousands of people in this year's event highlights this fact. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
And with that brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Economic divide.
The U.S. debt ceiling has turned into a crisis again. This could be a partisan issue, which most likely it is. But at the same time, what is the U.S. doing when it comes to bringing this to the last minute and pushing the envelope? That's going to be the topic of this edition of the program. Coming up in today's program, these are some of the highlights that we'll be covering. First, when it comes to the U.S. debt ceiling and how that is panning out. Well, it's a bipartisan issue. We're going to explore that. Government shutdown is one of the consequences that may happen, and that, as a result, would be a risk to all Americans. Okay, so that's how serious this is when it comes to the debt ceiling. Now, there have been, when it comes to debt ceiling, there have been previous debt ceiling increases in the U.S. on multiple occasions. However, this time around, we're looking at $31.4 trillion for the year 2023. A quick question that comes about here, which we'll explore, is payback even possible? Then we'll take a look at the actual debt. The U.S. national debt is an epic figure. And by some accounts, even military personnel have said it's a threat to U.S. national security. And it risks a default. Will that happen?
House of Representatives has passed a bill that would boost the U.S.'s $31.4 trillion Fed debt ceiling in exchange for slashing government spending, including programs championed by the Democratic President Joe Biden, passed by a party-line vote of 217 to 215, with four Republicans breaking ranks. The bill now heads to the Democrat-controlled Senate, where it stands little chance of passing. Biden has already threatened to veto the bill, which includes spending cuts that he previously called irresponsible.
We've done our job. I've sat down with the president on February 1st. He ignored the rest of the time. He treats it just like the border. He wants to ignore it and thinks it goes away. That doesn't work in America. He's putting the American economy in jeopardy by his lack of action. Now he should sit down and negotiate. We passed this early. We are in April, way ahead of the debt limit. We are the only party to take fiscal action in a sound mind that would lift the debt limit so we wouldn't have economic damage.
The U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has warned that the failure by Congress to raise the government's debt ceiling and the resulting default would trigger an economic catastrophe. The debt ceiling, also known as the debt limit, is the amount the U.S. can legally borrow to fulfill its financial obligations. When it comes to the U.S. national debt, the debt ceiling has been increased multiple times, the most recent one to have been risen to $31.4 trillion in December 2021. A failure to raise the limit would see the U.S. default. Lifting the debt ceiling was once a fairly routine vote. Since 1960, Congress has raised the ceiling 78 times, 49 times under Republican presidents, and 29 times under Democratic presidents. The debt ceiling was last raised in 2021 to $31.4 trillion, where it currently stands. Big increases in recent years have come not only from spending to combat COVID-19 and on the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, but also to cover the rising medical costs of an aging population and to fund all other services that government provides. The U.S. national debt has reached such epic proportions that it is said to be the biggest threat to U.S. national security. At the same time, one of the biggest U.S. spending is on its military, which is more than the next nine top spending countries combined. Financial markets are growing increasingly concerned about the standoff, sending the cost of insuring exposure to U.S. debt to its highest level in a decade, with financial analysts warning about the increasing risk of a default.
It's time now for the social media post on this program. There was a lot of bickering when it came on this topic, taking a look at the posts that we were perusing through. Anyways, first up, as total debt surpasses $31.4 trillion, the current statutory limit, the Treasury is undertaking a series of bookkeeping maneuvers to disguise new borrowing and to keep the government operating. Next, this person said, I can't believe I'm writing this, but the U.S. Treasury will be in the market borrowing $207 billion today, of which it listed some items like $60 billion of 44-day cash management bills or $70 billion of four-week T-bills. Obviously, a lot of borrowing going on there, taking a look at this list. We then go to a website, the fake fight over the debt ceiling was the title. The debt ceiling forces us to talk about the proper role of government, but nobody wants to do that. We figure we'll break this down further. Democrats, of course, are not even pretending to rein in government and simply propose new spending. And then it says that's a big problem because our $31 trillion national debt has reached unprecedented levels and does need to be limited and then reduced. Next, we go to this post where it says the debt ceiling, America's budget crisis of its own creation. The dispute over U.S. national debt is not one of economics, but of gridlocked partisan politics. All right, those were some of the social media posts there. Let me introduce our guest for this first segment of our Q&A. First, we're going to bring in Martin Saif. He's a former managing editor and at International Affairs and a former chief news analyst at United Press International. Martin Saif, welcome to Economic Divide. This is a common scenario when it comes to the debt ceiling and the showdown that basically it seems like it's a showdown between the parties. Republicans have refused to increase the U.S. debt ceiling, and that's a limit on the amount of money Washington can borrow. And you need, obviously, to have the U.S. president consent to the large spending cuts, which, obviously, he has so far rejected. But then, at the end, you always get this increase one way or another. At least that's what history has proven. Why does the U.S. find itself in this position time and again?
I think the ultimate reason, unfortunately, is that we have a 1789 constitution, a constitution that is now almost a quarter of a millennium old, and we have not adapted it for the 21st century. And in American society today, that atmosphere of bipartisanship and statesmanship is breaking down. And that is the real problem. It is breaking down. You have to have cooperation to make the system work. And the cooperation is not there, certainly on the Republican side at the moment.
Okay, let's bring in now Richard Black. Richard Black is the former state senator of Virginia, and he's also a Republican politician. Richard Black, welcome to Economic Divide. You know, taking a look at this debt ceiling, I don't want to say debacle, but it really should be very simple. You have a budget that gets passed, voted on, and if you go, you have to act and spend according to that budget. But time and again, the U.S. president or its administration goes beyond that or reaches that limit. It sounds like there's not only oversight, but obviously there is, but by design, it's moving forward that way. What if the U.S. can't pay this huge debt of over $31 trillion? And what would be the impact on the U.S. economy?
Well, it's a very difficult issue. There really are two primary points. One is that the United States dollar is the world's reserve currency. Because so much of the world's trade is settled in dollars, it makes it somewhat of an essential currency, at least for the time being. It may not retain that status, but as long as it does, the United States can literally create $1 trillion out of thin air. Now, that can only go on for so long, but it may still be quite a while before that ends. Now, the other part of the question you asked deals with, you know, does it ever reach a point where it simply can't be paid? The more that you accumulate debt without having real production to back it up, the more seductive this becomes. And you see this constant ratcheting up and increase in debt. And right now the debt is very, very high. And that exposes us to risks of inflation. And it also puts pressure on the world's economy.
Time now for the Info News section of the program. As usual, we have picked four topics for you with an economic flavor. First up, we take a look at UK's economy. We've taken a look at UK's economy quite a bit in the past 6 months. But this one we had to bring to you because it's quite unbelievable. This is what the Bank of England has said, which is quite harsh, the message that it had for the Brits. It said that Britons need to accept that they are poorer. That's what they have said. This is while UK's finance minister has said this was a very difficult period, as prices of items like milk, sugar, and olive oil were around 40% higher than a year ago.
We understand the pressure that everyone is facing as a result of the increase in food prices, for example, that we see today. But the one thing they would not want us to do is to take a decision on pay that means that we entrench high inflation and we're still having these same bitter arguments in a year's time.
Next up, Russia-Iran de-dollarization. The next topic is just that, something we focused on quite a bit. Again, some of these news items need to be reintroduced in order to see what's going on with the latest. Here, Iran and Russia, they're taking the last steps toward integrating their economic banking systems. Iran's Shatab and Russia's Mir networks, these are the financial payment systems, they have started their joint financial activities on a trial basis. Really looking forward to seeing how that is going to pan out. All right, sanctions is up next in terms of anti-Russia sanctions that the West has executed against Russia. The Russian finance minister has said that these Western sanctions, they have actually boomeranged. That is said quite a bit when it comes to sanctions. And, of course, Russia and Iran have been at the receiving end. The EU's short-sighted policy is hurting the bloc more than Moscow. And he went on to say Western restrictions have diminished global confidence in the U.S. dollar and also the euro, adding, when Western countries introduce new packages of restrictions, we take anti-sanctions measures, and we see that we are succeeding. Finally, look at Israel's economy and see how they're doing with the protests that are still going strong after, lost count here. I think it's 4 months now that people there in the occupied territories are coming out and protesting against Netanyahu and his so-called judicial reforms. Moody's credit rating agency has cut Israel's sovereign credit rating, lowering Israel's outlook to stable from positive. It said the planned reforms could weaken Israel's institutions. The Israeli finance minister, however, had another take on it.
אם עלולה להיות פגיעה בכלכלה, ואגב, אני לא מאמין שתהיה פגיעה בכלכלה, אבל אם עלולה להיות פגיעה בכלכלה, זה בגלל כל מיני קמפיינים של שקרים ותבהלות וניציון אפילו מכוון לייצר סנטימנט שלילי בכלכלה כתוצאה מזה.
All right, those were the topics that we picked.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The in-depth session is upon us. The U.S. government has hit its $31.4 trillion debt ceiling. That has triggered fears of a nasty fallout for Americans. Well, here are some of the facts in this in-depth section behind the debt ceiling crisis. First up, as the national debt has soared, the U.S. Treasury Department has had to borrow more money to pay for government spending. That's the definition of it. The legislative curb on this borrowing is known as the debt ceiling. National debt soaring is another way of describing government spending. Then we move on to what the Treasury Department does in terms of spending. Well, it spends the maximum amount authorized under the ceiling, but Congress must decide to suspend or to raise the limit on borrowing. All right. Now, here's a look at how, irrespective of who's been in the White House, the U.S. debt has increased dramatically as you progress from the year 1981 all the way through the year 2022. No matter who's been in office, the debt ceiling has increased. Let's move on to the next total national debt and the debt ceiling. We've mentioned this figure before, September 2021, where the debt went, where it was at $28.5 trillion. It went all the way up to almost $31.5 trillion, which is where we stand. And that is where, obviously, the U.S. public debt is subject to its limit. All right, the next graph, a Moody's analysis, is what we're going to look at, which said that GOP spending cuts in a debt ceiling increase and the repercussions of it. Well, 2.6 million jobs, okay, that's a lot. Loss per day, $300 million. GDP loss, 0.3% of the U.S.'s GDP. Layoffs, now these are federal work layoffs, federal workers. 1 million, okay? And then you have one of the most important ones that could be impacted or will be impacted, and that's military staff salaries that are not going to get paid, and obviously that's going to affect the U.S.'s security, okay? So how serious of an issue this is. Then we move on to how the U.S. government has run a deficit. This is important because, again, why do they keep going above what they have to spend? How much money are we talking about? It's $1 trillion on average that the government spends more based on the budget that they pass. It's not just a matter of $100 million or $50 million, $1 trillion more. And obviously that's something that has been going on, but some say it's not sustainable, and it means that they spend more money than they receive in taxes and other revenue. And to make up the difference, it needs to continue to borrow. That's right, you guessed it right. Let's find out what our guests think. Martin Safe rejoins us. He's a former managing editor at International Affairs, also a former chief news analyst at United Press International. All right, Martin Safe, welcome back to Economic Divide. When you take a look at how the U.S. national debt has increased multiple times over the, obviously, years and decades, really, the most recent one, $31.4 trillion, December 2021 or January 2022, hasn't the U.S. debt reached a point, the question being that the figure is so high that, you know, can they ever pay it back? I mean, what if it defaults? What would be the impact on the U.S. economy, do you think?
If there is a default, it will be for the first time in U.S. history. It will be devastating to America's credibility in the world. It will probably cause a crash on Wall Street, such as we have not seen in almost a century since 1929. The results would be catastrophic. And it would throw the American economy and American society into chaos. And privately, a lot of Republicans realize this, but publicly they are cowards, and the Republicans are not certain they can defeat him in 2024. So they want to discredit him politically, and they also believe that if there is an economic recession, even if their policies cause it before 2024, they can blame the president and the Democrats as the party in office for that happening. So it's a very risky and irresponsible policy. It is not a national policy. It is not a patriotic policy in U.S. terms, but they wanted to simply get back into power.
All right, thank you for that, Martin.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.